What's happening, folks?
Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, it's the Patriot Nation Radio Show, and we are going live right now. See what happens. Playing my promo. It's not playing. Hey! So you see my flag and my picture, my hat. Just got back from New York and burying my dad. I want to give a big shout out to Operation First Response for all their help in the burial of my father. It was great what they did for us. I'm very proud, very happy. Hey, what's happening, everybody? In the live feed, we got Tim, Reb, Ed, Jess, Alex, Linda, George. Who else we got in here? Michael. Karen is watching. Hey, Karen, you're my guest. Karen, you see Karen there in the live feed. She's our guest tonight, and Steve. Please share this around. Start a watch party with your friends. Let's see what happens. Am I live? My promo is not playing. I don't know what's happening. It doesn't make no sense. I got volume on. Yes, here we go again. Here we go again on my own. All right, I'm a crappy singer. But anyway, let's try this one.
Thank you. You are listening to Patriot Nation Radio Live, 347-637-3942.
All right, there you have it, folks. Now let's see if the promo kicks in. It's a top-of-the-hour break. There's going to be commercials. There's going to be a commercial for Dave Bray USA, and there's going to be a commercial for LibertyRush.com. So any second now, it may kick in. There's some kind of delay happening. I hope the delay is not happening over the air. So anyhow, on Father's Day, my father here, he passed away. That's my dad. See him there? That's Pop. It's my hero. He's in a better place. He's no longer suffering. We got his flag. I got his dog tags. I got his hat and the picture of the ship that he served on during the Korean War. This is the USS Bori, DD-704 Destroyer. Yeah. So now I'm left to carry on his legacy with me and my son and my wife and our family, and here we go. I'm proud to be his son. We had an amazing service. I want to thank each and every one of you who may have contributed to one of our fundraising efforts. The first one helped us get there and chip in a little bit towards the burial. And the other fundraiser that I had on Facebook paid the retainer for the lawyer to, settle my dad's estate. So I will soon post a picture of that receipt from the lawyer so that folks who donated can see that the money went where it's supposed to go. And then the remainder of that cash filled up our gas tank so we could get home. And it was well much appreciated. Every single dime went to a good cause, burying my father and helping us retain a law firm to help us in settling the estate, which there was no will. So that's where we are. I'm back. I missed a whole bunch of shows. I had to reschedule this show. This show was scheduled for like the 24th or something like that. And I wasn't doing any shows. I was mourning my dad. He's good. He's in heaven now. He's with my grandma and my aunt, and my uncles and everybody else. My mom, everybody's there with him. They're having a grand old time because they're all, what I see right now is happening is a Scrabble off. They're up there playing Scrabble with Jesus. I believe it. I really believe that they're playing Scrabble with Jesus. But anyway, I gotta see. we may get this ad. It's going to maybe come popping up all of a sudden. So I'm going to bring in my guest right now. Her name is Karen Smith. She is a host at Radio Free South Africa. She is from South Africa. And we're going to hear all about the real deal, what's happening to the farmers in South Africa and the white farmers in South Africa, to be specific. So ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to hit the, hopefully it comes on. And I'm going to bring in my guest here in just 1 second. I just want to read this. So this is written by some left-wing propagandist, I would say, in my opinion. And I think this is a good way to start it, because then we can refute it from someone who's from this region. Okay, I think this is going to be amazing. Because this is a serious situation, what's happening. Karen, I got your mic hot, and you're on the show. Welcome to the show. Say hello, and then I'm going to read this real fast.
Hi, Mark. It's great to be with you again.
Yes, ma'am. Long time ago, I guess, Operation American Spring. I don't know if folks remember that. It was single-handedly squashed because of Glenn Beck's big blabbermouth. But there was a great number of patriots made it out there, and some stayed for a pretty long time. And these patriots should be commended, especially Colonel Harry Riley. He worked tirelessly. But anyway, let me read this real fast. This is from one of the great things called Wikipedia. And I don't really follow Wikipedia, but sometimes I go there and I read stuff like this, and I go, you know what? We got a person who's from this region, South Africa, where the farmers are getting systematically murdered. And what we're going to do is we're going to read this and get ready, Karen. Because when I read this, I was like, oh, my God. Violent crimes include a murder, assault, and robbery that take place on farms in South Africa, targeting farmers who are usually white and farm workers who are usually black. The term has no formal legal definition, but such attacks have been the subject of discussion by media and public figures in South Africa and abroad. There is insufficient data to reliably estimate a murder rate for South African farmers. South African government data indicated between 58 and 74 murders on farms annually between 2015 and 2017. These figures are broadly consistent with the figures collected by Transvaal Agricultural Union, or TAU. They are a farmers' union. Due to the problems associated with counting the number of South African farmers and farm murders, it is unclear whether farmers are at greater risk of being murdered than other South Africans. Data released by the South African government in 2018 showed that the number of farm attacks has increased between 2012 and 2018, but the number of murders on farms had decreased year by year during the same period. The farming organization Agra SA reported that the murder rate on farms had declined to the lowest level in 20 years, to a third of the level recorded in 1998. Unsubstantiated claims that such attacks on farmers disproportionately target whites are a key element of the white genocide conspiracy theory and have become common talking point among white nationalists worldwide. However, there are no reliable figures that suggest that white farmers are being targeted in particular, or that they are at a disproportionate risk of being killed, while South Africa has more white farmers overall. Black farm workers are more likely to be killed. Fact checkers have wildly identified the notion of white genocide in South Africa as a falsehood or a myth. The government of South Africa, other analysts, and the right-wing Africa rights group AfriForum maintain that farm attacks are part of a broader crime problem in South Africa and do not have a racial motivation. Well, I think my guest this evening begs to differ on this story. Now I'm sure that that's a little pile of crap right there and full of falsehoods. Am I correct, Karen?
Mark, I was about to smash my telephone while you were reading that. The fact checkers that they use in South Africa are called Africa Check, and they are run by the Soros Open Borders Foundation, and they are the same as Snopes. So you can take that fact check and use it for whatever you feel good, and then flush. Because it's the same bunch of people by the same fact checkers, but only the African version. I have a number here. There were 63 farm attacks and 10 farmers murdered since the start of June. And that was June the 29th. 63 farm attacks and 10 farmers murdered in 29 days. So if that is not disproportionate crime levels, then I don't know what is. And what you need to understand is that a murder in South Africa is not a quick shot in the head. What they do is they come to your house and they wait there for you to come home from work or come in from the fields or whatever. If the wife should be in the house, they'll tie her up. And then when the husband comes home, they'll tie him up. And then they'll tie the children up. And they will often cut off the father's eyelids so he cannot not watch what is being done to his family. They pour hot oil down the people's throats. They burn them with irons that you iron your clothes with. They drill holes into them with electric drills. They drown the children in boiling water. They rape the women and girls with sharpened broomsticks and broken bottles. They can stay in your home for 3 or 4 days at a time while they cook your food and eat and play your music, etc., etc., and have a good time. Now, generally, they will leave the father alive because they know that he will probably commit suicide in the near future because of a feeling of total helplessness at not being able to protect his family. So we had these figures extrapolated into American figures, and it would amount to 2,000 American farmers being murdered per month. So if you compare that, you cannot tell me that this is just ordinary crime and, well, farmers are not targeted. Because being a farmer in South Africa is 100 times more dangerous than being a policeman. The murder rate for farmers is 130 per 100,000, where for policemen it is way, way less than that.
And so the statistics that we just quoted here a minute ago are really malarkey. The numbers of, they were saying, like, all right, between 65 and 75 annually for 3 years, 2015, 16, 17, and 18. In those 4 years, they said 65 to 75 for a year. You just gave a statistic that was that amount in 29 days. Is that correct?
63 attacks and 10 murders in 29 days. So in the 25 years that the African National Congress have been in power, when that Saint Mandela took over in 1994, we can guarantee and prove 4,000 farm murders. Now, when the ANC took over, we had about 75,000 commercial farms in South Africa. The number is now down to 20,000, and of those, 10,000 are desperately trying to sell their farms. Because apart from the farm murders, the problem is that the government is bringing in expropriation without compensation, which means they can take your farm, your house, your business, your furniture, your car, your bank account, your intellectual property, and pay you absolutely nothing for it. So while the population in South Africa has exploded in the last 25 years, the farming community has diminished. So, and this year, the farmers are not planting because they have to take out a loan for seed and equipment to plant, and they don't see the point in it if their farms are going to be taken away with no compensation. While the banks have told them, you signed the mortgage on that farm, therefore, no matter what happens, you will pay the mortgage for that farm. So, you know, they are in a terrible catch-22 situation, and what are they going to do?
And I think that if Americans aren't careful and they vote for, say, reparations in the next election, and because a Democrat wins and now we have reparations, you know, reparations are going to lead to this very thing that is happening in South Africa. If we're not careful and watch what the heck we do. Do you agree with that statement possibly?
Absolutely. South Africa is the petri dish for what is happening in the rest of the world. So what they did in South Africa was roll it out very, very slowly. It was like a drip, drip, drip. You know, the water torture dripping on stone. And they waited. So they do a small thing. Like when they first took over in 1994, the first thing they did was disband the commando system, which was a system where people looked after the farmers. If a farmer was in trouble, the commandos would come and help him. So they disbanded that. Then they disarmed the populace. And they waited to see if anybody would rise up and complain, whether the world would step in. Well, nothing happened. So bit by bit, they took more and more of our freedoms. You know, we started out with a small fence in front of your yard. This is living in South Africa for you. And it describes how this happened. So instead of a fence, you had to put up an 8-foot wall and electric gates. And then you had to put electric wiring on top of the 8-foot wall. And then you had to put burglar bars on your doors. And then you had to put security gates on your doors. And then you had to put a security gate between the sleeping quarters and the rest of the house. And this happened slowly, slowly, slowly. And all of us got so used to living like this that you just took it as a normal way of life. And nobody stepped in. Nobody said anything. Nobody did anything. So in the beginning, what they did was, and it's in the Constitution, that they could take land away from the whites, but they had to pay fair market value. So they started taking farms away, and a lot of the farmers that I know personally are still waiting to be paid for the farms that were taken away 10, 15 years ago. And some of the farms were handed over to black tribes who had claimed the farm. Now, in order to claim somebody's farm, all you had to do was say, and I know this because my father's farm had a land claim on it, and the claim was that 200 years ago, my great-great-great-grandfather, he herded goats on this property. Therefore, this property was stolen from us, and we need to get the land back. So the government would take it back. In most cases, the government kept the land, or it was handed out to friends in government. But those farms that were given over to black people, they chopped down every tree. They put the animals in the houses, so they used the houses for cow sheds and goat pens. They eventually broke down every house, took every brick, every window frame, everything, until the house was just a foundation sitting there. One of the biggest fruit farms, citrus farms in South Africa. In fact, all over the world, almost certainly one out of three oranges, lemons that you bought was from Zebedelia Farm. Now, it was a huge, huge citrus exporting farm, which was handed to a black tribe. The farm today is non-existent. Absolutely producing Nothing. Zip, zero, nothing. There is nothing coming out of that farm. The same happened to a tea estate, which was just down the road from our farm. It was handed over to the blacks. So now instead of these rolling hills of these beautiful tea plants and a huge restaurant at the top of the hill where you could get an English cream tea, there is nothing. It is gone, finished, for bay. And then the black government wonders why they are bankrupt. So for apart from fraud and corruption, everything that they exported is now gone. So now they want to change the constitution so that they can take that land, but not just farming land. Everything that whites own, they can take it with no compensation whatsoever. And there were...
Sounds like the white folks need to get out of there.
We can't, Mark. We can't. There is not a country in the world that will take us. And the figures are like this. Now, the government will also tell you, we've fact-checked it, it is not true. There are more than 480 white squatter camps in South Africa. Of the estimated 3.5 million people living in South Africa, 1 million of them, and possibly more because we will never know real figures, are living in white squatter camps, which means they don't know where their next meal is coming from because they get no help from the government. Because of the broad-based black economic empowerment system in South Africa, which is affirmative action on steroids, they are not allowed to get charity from any company in the country. If a company gives a charity donation to a white-only charity, they will get points deducted from their broad-based black economic empowerment score at the end of the month, and they will never get a government tender again. So they cannot donate to whites. I work very hard for South African Family Relief Project, which is a charity which works only with white people. And they have been so badly discriminated against because they refuse to work with 80% black people. You have to. Your company has to be 80% black. Whether the people are qualified for the job or unqualified for the job, it doesn't matter. Every aspect of your company has to be 80% black. And so, only 1 out of 11 employees can be white. So what happened when this was brought in the mid-70s, was a lot of whites lost their jobs. And as a consequence of that, and the broad-based black economic empowerment laws being strengthened every year, whites are now basically excluded from the job market and will never get a job again. So even if we could find a country that would take these people as asylees or refugees, they can't get there because they don't have the money.
All right.
So what do you do?
So now basically this is boiling up to become a humanitarian crisis in South Africa. It already is.
It is, Mark. It is.
So here in the States, the kids, they go around at Halloween with a UNICEF can. It's supposed to help people in Africa. There's all kinds of things that people do that are supposed to help Africans and South Africans. And none of this charity they're allowed to be accepted. You're not allowed to accept the charity from Western countries or just towns and businesses within South Africa.
The problem, so let me tell you a story about my own church. Well, it's my ex-church in my own village that I live in Texas. They were going to send some missionaries to Johannesburg, to South Africa. And I asked to meet with them before they left so I could explain the situation to them, that it was not only black people. Although, Mark, please understand, the black people in South Africa are suffering terribly. They are really, it is estimated that the black unemployment rate is 57, as high as 57%. amongst young black people. So you must understand that the blacks are suffering really, really, really badly. But my concentration is on the minority groups, such as the whites, the Khoisan, and the coloureds. Now, coloureds is not a swear word in South Africa. They proudly call themselves that. They are mixed race people. And they call themselves the Cape Coloureds. You know, they basically Cape Malays who are mixed race now. So they are the three total minority groups in South Africa. And between all of them, there are maybe 12 million of those three groups of people. So they are my focus, because I do not know a country in the world where the majority has to be protected from the minority by over 100 race-based laws in favor of the majority.
Right. So, a lot of this to me sounds very reminiscent to, say, the Holocaust. Now, we have turds parading around in Congress, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, saying that these children, illegal immigrant children, are living in concentration camps. And it's an insult to the Jewish people. And what also should be an insult to our Jewish brothers and sisters, what also should be a disgusting thing to our Jewish brothers and sisters, is the plight of the white farmer in South Africa, because a lot of these things sound like Nazism. And the way Hitler slowly but surely got the Jews rounded up and started killing them. It sounds just a lot like that. Is that what is happening here? Is it like total, like, annihilation?
Mark, what you have to understand is that there were actually concentration camps in South Africa during the Boer War. During the Boer War, where the South Africans were fighting for their independence, like your War of Independence here, they were fighting the British for the same reason. They did not want to be under British rule. And to simplify it, in the two Boer republics, which were accepted as countries by the rest of the world, the Orange Free State and the Transvaal were two Boer republics. Now, diamonds were found in one and gold were found in the other. And the British, of course, wanted the riches from these two republics. So the one said, look here, the diamonds have been found on the outskirts of our republic. You can have them. Just leave us alone. You can have them. Unfortunately for the Transvaal, the diamonds were in the very middle of their country. So they said, no, you cannot have them. Forget it. So they went to war, okay. And the British shipped in, I think it was 40,000 troops from Britain, to fight this tiny little group of people, because never in South Africa's history have there been more than 6 million whites in the country. So they shipped in these people, and they were losing the war because they had these supply lines with their red coats and their little drummer boy, you know, marching to war and plainly visible to everybody. Whereas the Boers did not have an organized army. They were commandos. They went there at their own cost, and they had to bring a horse, a saddle, food for a week, and their Martini Henry, which was their gun, you know, front-end loader gun. They had to bring those with them. Now, for them, their supply line was every farm in the place. They could go to any farm, get a night's sleep, a bath, meal, and head out the next day. Whereas the British couldn't do that. Their supply lines were terribly long. And so the Boers would hide out in the bush, which they knew like the back of their hands, dash out on their little Boer ponies, attack the British lines, and disappear back into the bush. So what the British did was a scorched earth policy. They would go and burn the farms down, salt the land and the water, poison the water supply, round up the women and children and the elderly, and put them in concentration camps, where 25% of the white Afrikaner population died during that war. So they didn't win the war by fighting. They won the war because the Afrikaner said, look here, what the hell am I fighting for? I don't have a farm to go back to. I don't have a family. I don't have anything. I don't even know where my farm was anymore. So, okay, we give up. We surrender. So they won it that way. So concentration camps is a total insult to the white Afrikaans population as well. But they won't let them in here. They will not take Afrikaners. And the other thing is, a boer, which is a farmer in South Africa, is a very stubborn person. They will tell you, my family have farmed this land for 300 and more years. I am not leaving. Why should I leave? I am part of the African soil. I'm as African as a black person is, and I am not leaving. So for every three that want to leave, there's one that refuses to leave. But I don't see a good solution for them. I can't see a way out for these people because they are sadly outnumbered. If there are three, maybe 3.5 million of them, and the population overall is 70 million, and they've been disarmed, what chance do they have, Mark, of standing up and saying no more unless somebody in the world helps them?
And how long ago did they disarm the population?
In 1994-95, when Nelson Mandela took over as president, what the problem was, Mark, is that we, as white citizens under the National Party, you had to have a gun license in order to buy a gun. So, nice people that we were, we all had gun licenses, and so the ANC had a lovely gun registry when they took over. They knew who you were, how many firearms you had, how where you lived, because we had a identity book that we had to carry around with us. And if you changed address, you had to let the government know that you had changed address. And in it was your marriage license, your birth certificate, your driver's license, etc., etc. So don't ever allow your guns to be registered. Do not ever allow that, because it is the first step to taking them away from you, and you will never get them back. Because what the ANC told us was this: go and hand in your guns at your nearest police station. So if your surname begins with an A, you've got until this date to hand them in. If it begins with a B, you've got until that date to hand them in. But then you apply for a new license through the ANC government. And when you get that license, you go back to the police station and you pick up your gun, which is kept in a gun safe at the police station. Now, being very law-abiding citizens, which white South Africans really are, most of us did that, believing that the government, works in your best interest. I'll never, ever believe that again. But we did believe that. So then you apply with the ANC. And for a million different reasons, your gun license 25 years later has never come. And your gun has either been stolen from the police station, sold by the police to criminals, or rented out by the day for $5 a day to criminals. And recently, the police then went and melted down, I don't know if it was 30,000 or 300,000, I'm not sure of that number, but it was either 30 or 300,000 firearms that they had taken in on the condition that you would get them back. I'm sure that mine was one of them. My parents were some of them too, because we never, ever, ever got a license through the ANC. And now they're saying we got to tighten up the rules so that you cannot get a license at all. So that's what they did to us. And now what? Now somebody breaks into your house. I'll tell you a story about a friend of mine. These are all personal experiences so that nobody can tell me I'm talking rubbish. They are personal. So a friend of mine was a single mom, and she had a 13-year-old daughter. And her daughter heard terrible noises coming from her mom's bedroom one night. So she went in to see what was happening, and there were two blacks raping her mother. She picked up the bedside table and hit the guys with it. The one guy died, and the other guy was badly injured. That girl is in jail for life for saving her mother. If you protect yourself in South Africa, you will go to jail, because those people who attacked you will go and report you at the police station. They will go free, and you will spend your life in jail.
So now, all right, let me recap this a little bit for some of the folks. They had gun registration. Okay, now this is what they're trying to do here, folks. This is exactly what they're trying to do here. So it seems to me that South Africa is the testing ground for what they want to do anywhere else in the world where guns are permitted, especially the United States of America. So you went down to the gun store, you got yourself a gun, you had a background check, you filled out all this paperwork, you registered your gun, you got a license. Now you're in a federal database. The ANC comes in, takes over, they got the government. They know who everybody is who has a gun because they had this gun registry. So then they tell everybody to turn in their license and their guns to the police, reapply with the new government, and then go back to the police station to get your weapon, which you never got back ever again, and that was it. It was gone. It made it to the smelting pot. It was melted down and turned into, like, maybe some plumbing pipes or something. Right?
Yes.
Now we look at America. And listen to what the Democrats want to do. They want expanded background checks. They want gun registration. They want anytime you buy a gun, they want you to be in a database with you bought. And it always has to be updated every time you buy a weapon. You can't just – so this is what they're doing. And step by step, they're following in the footsteps of how they disarmed Africans. If you listen to what Karen's saying, step – by step, they're doing the same exact thing here in America to get our guns. And we got to stand up because once they get the guns, reparations, yay! And the same plight will be occurring here. I really believe this is the end goal. South Africa is the testing grounds for what they want to do in the good old USA. So what does the United Nations say about the plight of the white South African farmer?
Have you heard crickets, Mark?
Yeah, I hear them out. They're outside right now.
There you go. That is what they have to say about the plight of the South African farmer. If you look at the UN report on Africa and you look at South Africa, you will see zero about the whites. Zero. You will hear xenophobic attacks. That's the black population of South Africa attacking Zimbabweans or Mozambicans who have come in, flooded into the country because Zimbabwe, although they were buying rats for a while to eat, there are now no more rats left, and they are starving because they took the farms from the white farmers. There is no food in Zimbabwe, none. So they're flooding into South Africa. So you will hear the danger of xenophobic attacks, killing Zimbabweans. Nick, do you know what necklacing is, Mark?
No. Please
okay.
Help.
So Nelson Mandela's wife, Winnie Mandela, invented this horrific form of killing people. She had this thing called a football club, who were basically a bunch of teenagers who did the wet work for Winnie Mandela. They sorted out people she didn't like. Now, they were severely punished if they did or didn't do something that they were told to do. And this guy, Stompion Paul, he offended Winnie Mandela, and she invented necklacing as a way of punishment for him. So what they do is they either chop off your arms at the elbow, or they tie your arms to your body with barbed wire, tie your feet together with barbed wire, put a tire over your body, pour gasoline into it, and set it alight. And they dance and sing and jump about, celebrating while you burn to death in the most horrible, horrible of ways. So that is what necklacing is. So the blacks, as far as I know, have never used that method on a white. I stand under correction, but I have never heard of it being used on a white person, only on black people. So you will hear by the United Nations and Amnesty International and your own South American embassy who reports on Africa, you will hear about these things, but you will not hear a word about white South Africans being murdered. It is as if once the world had been responsible for handing South Africa over to the ANC on a silver platter, they then said, hooray, the Rainbow Nation's up and running, and turned their backs on it, never to look at it again. they cannot admit that they screwed up royally, and they are responsible for 4,000 farmers' deaths, 58 murders a day, and those are only the ones reported to the police. More than 4,000 rapes a month reported to the police, and Interpol says that that number is probably double. So in the last 25 years, there have been 1 million people murdered, not white people alone, white and black, but 1 million murders in South Africa, and the world turns a blind eye.
So, folks, this is a stark warning. The reason that I wanted to have this show is because I truly believe we are watching the model for the rest of the world. What they're doing down there to these folks is exactly what they want to do to us. I'm telling you, it seems, I'm listening to Karen tell it how it is, and it seems like we're in maybe phase 3 of the gun confiscation part, you know, and reparations are coming with the next Democrat president. If we ever get another Democratic president, they're going to be coming for reparations. And the reparations will turn into land confiscation, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, the Native American sits on their reservation going, holy crap, what about our land? So somehow, somewhere in all that mix, I believe the Native Americans will also come out and join in the reparation cry. And soon, they will squash the white American. I'm not racist. It's not a racist call. It's just what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing. The left Democrats are radically out of their mind. And what these people don't understand is if something like this occurs, these nice Democrats that may be of the white persuasion, the Caucasian persuasion, will also be targeted once the takeover happens. If it happens, if in fact this whole model plays out like it did in South Africa, as it's slowly but surely winding its way through America, through political correctness, and through, oh my goodness, I'm so sorry, I have white guilt for what happened 250 years ago, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
You know, none of us here alive today owned a slave, and none of us here alive today were slaves. And we need to let that pass, stay in the past as a history lesson so that it never gets repeated again. That would be the smart way. But apparently today in the good old USA, we're not that smart. There was a movie I watched a long time ago. I can't remember exactly the name of it, but in that movie, everybody was like smart and happy and working and everything was great. And little by little, technology and society dumbed the people down. And at the end of the movie, they were just too dumb to fight back, and the government took over. Because you're too dumb and too stupid and too lazy to fight back. At one point, you just go, okay, whatever. And you sit on a chair. This is the way it is. And we're having this problem now because in America, we have this illusion of freedom. We have people like my dad who go off to battle to defend what they feel is they're defending freedom. But we have this illusion of freedom because why? Because we can go down to the local 7-Eleven and get us a 24-pack of cold beer, go over to the wing house, get a whole pile of spicy wings, drive over to the cigarette store, get a fat cigar and a pack of cigarettes, drive back to our couch, sit on the couch with a 60-inch screen TV and watch football and baseball and hockey and basketball and all this fun stuff. And that to us, that's free. And then if we don't like this house, we can pack up our house and go to Idaho. So that's freedom to most people. Oh, everything else, that's not affecting me. I hear that all the time. Oh, what they're doing in D.C. is not affecting me. I still can see the game on my big TV, drive my car, go here and there. I got my Second Amendment. I can say what the heck I want, blah, 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 blah. It's not affecting me. And that is one of the biggest problems we're having in this country today. And if you recall the story of Rome, what brought them down was it's so reminiscent. They're getting us from within, slowly breaking us down from within our system, while the people are distracted with football, baseball, soccer, FIFA. Oh, here comes the football World Cup. Here comes Tiger Woods with his golf club. Here comes the New York Yankees with another World Series. Oh, my God, it's amazing. And little by little, they erode your freedom. And one day, you're not free. And it's happening. It's happening in this country, and we're not fighting it. They didn't fight it in South Africa. You heard Karen say in the show, it was just the way of life. Okay, you know, we're law-abiding people. We went along with it because we want to do what's right. We want to stay within the bounds of the law so we don't go to prison and we don't get in trouble. And so you obey the laws as they're written. And next thing you know, you have no freedom. Your freedom is gone. Puff of smoke. David Copperfield makes your freedom disappear. Tonight in Vegas, poof, there goes your freedom. I'm telling you. Does that sound about right, Karen?
Mark, the problem here is that people don't even know they had those freedoms because you damn well stopped teaching it in school. You know,
which
you don't
also
teach
doing
them here, anymore.
They're doing the same thing right here in good old USA. They are indoctrinating the kids, and they are not teaching them that their rights are protected by the Constitution. Some schools are teaching the kids that the Boston Tea Party was carried out by a bunch of domestic terrorists. How dare they?
Well,
you know?
In reality, are we not domestic terrorists now? If you look at YouTube and Google and Facebook and all of those things, we are classified as domestic terrorists for speaking the way we are now. And the thing is, it's ridiculous because all we are doing is telling the truth. And telling the truth has now become a thought crime. Never mind hate speech, it's a thought crime. And I don't understand it, Mark, because I've been doing this for over 10 years now, trying to get Americans to wake up to the fact that South Africa is coming to their country. And you have to stand up now while you still have the numbers. Because if you look at the tens of thousands running across your borders every single day, you are soon not going to have the numbers to stand up and repel this invasion. And then you are done for. So I don't know what else anybody can do.
So this coming across the southern border is like the folks from Zimbabwe coming into South Africa, basically, no?
Yes, it is. It is the same thing. But, you know, people speak so terribly about apartheid. I need to tell you a thing about apartheid. Firstly, it was invented by the British in the 1900s, 1910, 1913. They put all those laws in place, and we were a British Commonwealth. We were run by the British. So those laws were put in place by them. The Nationalist Party only took over the country in 1948. But we were still under British rule. So in the 1960s, when we got independence from the British, that was the time between 1962 and 1982 about when all of the apartheid laws were just about done in by the South African government. We were already abolishing those laws. So those 20 years were really a British free rule by the Afrikaners. Now, people talk so badly about apartheid, but under apartheid rule, the black population of South Africa grew 920%, grew that amount. So if we were that bad to them, if we were killing them in the streets by their millions, if we were discriminating against them, which the world was told we were doing, why did the population grow so much? Why did all our tax money go to homeland? Say each tribe had their own homeland. So if you were a Venda, you lived in Venda. If you were a Zulu, you lived in Zululand. Under your chief, under your own rules. But the white taxpayer built you schools, hospitals, houses, airports, universities, running water, electricity, all of those things. Nelson Mandela himself became a lawyer under the dreaded system of apartheid where they didn't educate blacks, you understand. They had no education whatsoever. In fact, Gandhi became a lawyer in Durban under the apartheid system. So the lies that the world was told about apartheid are ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. The population grew 920%. Does that not explain everything?
And everybody was working and everything. You had a nice yard and a nice house, right?
But the blacks as well, they are crying today to get apartheid back. They say there was law and order. They had jobs. Everything worked. Now what they do, a market is totally ridiculous. Last year, now the school year in South Africa is January to November. So last year, always at exam time, the students protest and they burn down schools and they burn the universities so they don't have to write exams. Okay, so last year, they burnt down a lot more than this, but three particular schools in a rural area. And this year in January, when they had to go back to school, they burnt down more schools because those schools had not been rebuilt yet. So the answer to not having schools to go to is destroy even more schools. It doesn't make any sense. The other thing that they've done is they have burnt, I don't know how many, billions of rands worth of trains. Now, commuter trains in South Africa are the main means of transport, those and black taxis, which are essentially minibuses that you fill with 30 people. You put 30 people in a minibus and use it as a taxi, okay? So black trains are the main commuter thing. So if a train is late or if the train is full, they'll burn it. And then tomorrow that train won't come, so they'll burn three more trains and the station because now there wasn't a train today. And what they've done this year already, 200 trucks, now you call them 18-wheelers here, that carry produce and goods all over South Africa. 200 trucks have been attacked, looted, and burnt. They have locked some drivers in the cab and burnt them alive so they could loot the truck. Now, these are the things that are happening in that country that never, ever happened under the white government. The roads have fallen apart. The potholes are so big you could lose your entire car in them. In fact, the city councils, which we call a municipality, have now given out instructions to the people on how to fill potholes yourself because they're not doing it. The Electricity Supply Commission, there's only one in South Africa. Now, under the white government, they supplied 80% of the power for the whole of sub-Saharan Africa. Not just South Africa, but 80% for the whole of sub-Saharan Africa. Now, they can't even supply South Africa. You have a thing called rolling blackouts, where the Electricity Supply Commission will turn off your electricity without warning for 24 hours or a week, depending on how they feel, and you are without power. Now, imagine that. Your electric gates don't work. You can't charge your phone. You don't have a landline working. Your telephone doesn't work. Your alarm system doesn't work. Your fridge goes out. Your freezer goes out. Imagine that. You are totally open to robbery, house invasion, whatever, because you have no means to protect yourself. And if you're running a business, how do you do that for a week if the power is out? So these are the things that are happening under the ANC government. The country is no longer a country. And I haven't even spoken about the corruption, the theft, the unbelievable, blatant theft that the ANC cadres, as they call themselves, and mainly the old boys club, if you would understand it that way. This is really terrible, what is going on in South Africa. They have stolen the country blind. It is now a junk status. Companies are leaving in droves because you have to give 51% of your company to blacks. So you either have to have a black partner who owns 51%, or if you're IBM, how do you do that? You have shareholders to answer to. How do you give 51% of your company away? So they're leaving. And also the threat now of their property being taken away. Why would they want to stay? You know, why would they want to stay? So this is where we're at in South Africa right now. Trump was reported to have said that it, amongst other African countries, is a shithole. And I'm sorry to tell you, that's exactly what it is. He was right.
It's crazy. So is there a website or something where people can maybe donate to help some of these farmers that are being having this done to their families and themselves?
Yes, you can donate on my website. I'll tell you the awful thing about this is we put up a GoFundMe, and one of the organizations here, the Anti-Defamation, the ADL, made GoFundMe take it down because they said we were scamming because there's nothing wrong in South Africa. And so we banned from doing that now. We cannot put up GoFundMes. And the PayPal of a lot of the charity organizations in South Africa have been frozen, with the funds that are in them now being kept by PayPal for 6 months. They can't get them. So if you donate on my website, which is radiofreesouthafrica.com, we have a way that is working right now to get money to them. I don't know how long it will work because every door that we squeeze open, they slam in our faces. But for now, the method we are using is working. You cannot donate goods to South Africa because this is what happens. Either they get stolen in the post, because the post offices in South Africa are run by the government, and they're an absolute disaster. They have been looted. They've got warehouses full of parcels that have just not been delivered. So they're either stolen, or, as happened when some British people put together a whole container load of goods to go to South Africa, they shipped them to South Africa, and when the charity went to collect them, they were slapped with a 70,000 rand tax on it, which they could obviously not pay because they're a charity. So it was given to a black squatter camp, given, while the whites could get nothing. So you cannot send goods to South Africa. The only way that you can help them is to donate money. And that's what I spend half of my day every day doing, is collecting donations for those people.
Amen. It's unbelievable. And you also have a radio show and do a whole pile of other interviews and things as much as possible, trying to spread the word. Well, what's your show and how can folks find you?
Okay, I at the moment we have Radio Free South Africa, which is on Blog Talk. They can find it on Facebook. I have a Radio Free South Africa page. I have a website, radiofreesouthafrica.com. I have a YouTube channel, which is sadly unused at the moment. I just have not had time. Things are so bad in South Africa, I really haven't had time. We are going to have a streaming on Roku live TV show within the next 3 weeks. We will also be live on Tuesday afternoons on Revolution Radio. We go out on 6 channels every show we do. We are shared by many, many shows like yourself, the Briza show, the Graham Hart show with Briza. We are shared all over the world. I did 33 shows in 30 days last month. I'm exhausted, but it has to be done because things in South Africa have reached critical status now, and we have to do something to wake the world up to help them. These people are starving, Mark. It is winter in South Africa now. They don't have blankets. They don't have a roof over their head. They have children who are suffering from rickets and learning disabilities and all kinds of horrible, horrible cognitive problems because they don't have, they can't buy formula, they don't have the money for it. These people are starving. The million people in camps in South Africa do not have food or blankets or clothes or education for their children or anything. So it is essential that if you have got $5, you have to understand that the dollar is about $13.80 to the dollar right now. So if you give $1, they get $13. And we can feed a family of 4 on $5 for a week. So please consider helping. These people are desperate. And the food prices are going up every day because there is no food. The farmers are not planting. There's been a terrible drought for years. The water is non-existent. It is a terrible, terrible, terrible situation. And nobody is willing to help.
Folks, that is really unbelievable what's happening there in South Africa. If you want to look, search out Radio Free South Africa, radiofreesouthafrica.com, and listen to the show. It's on the Blog Talk Radio format, just like I have here. And do you also do a live, like I'm doing a live feed, you do the same thing?
No, we don't do that yet, but we will be streaming live on the Roku channel, which I will then try and stream live on Facebook and put up the link to it. We'll be doing that very soon. I'm just setting up the studio. It's a whole technical thing. I'm old. I'm disabled. I'm technologically challenged, but I'm trying my best to get it up and running. You know?
I'm highly challenged. We talked about that. I'm highly technologically challenged myself, to be politically correct. To be politically incorrect when it comes to this technology, I'm freaking retarded. I can't help it. So
there
anyhow.
Mark, I do all of this on my own. I do my Facebook. I do all the shows. I do all of this alone. I have nobody to help me with my website, et cetera, et cetera. So, and the collecting of donations and going to visit congressmen here, which we do as often as we can, whenever they'll agree to see us, we then have to fly to Washington to do this. You know, it's a hell of an expense. And I do it single-handed. So it's a heartbreaking, soul-destroying, exhausting, thankless job. But damn it, someone has to do it.
Amen. God bless you for all your hard work. And, you know, it's really serious, folks. And the mainstream media don't cover it. The United Nations turn their back on these people. And we are seeing the model in South Africa of what they want to do here in the good old USA. Systematically take us apart from the inside out, and then we pay reparations and other things. It's going to be interesting times if you don't stand up as an American and exert your rights as a citizen protected by the United States Constitution. This is America, land of the free, because of the brave. We can't let the men and women who go defending freedom, who gave the ultimate sacrifices, deaths, be in vain and let this country slip away. You have to do something. Do a radio show. If you got nothing, you got your voice. A conservative voice is a powerful weapon.
But they're trying to shut us down. They're trying to shut us down. Everywhere we have a voice, they're trying to shut us down.
Little by little. But, you know, so far we got the Blog Talk Radio format and it works and we're getting out there. They actually allow these Facebook Live videos to still go out. For now, it's highly important that we keep speaking while we got the platform and the opportunity to make a stand, do something. And, Karen, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. It's very important. Maybe we can do this again in 6 or 8 weeks. We'll do it again and remind people.
Thank you very much, Mark. And before I go, I'd really like to say condolences on the death of your father. As I told you, my dad was one of these farm murder victims in South Africa, and I couldn't go back to his funeral. And when my mom died shortly afterwards, I couldn't go back either. And my brother, at that same farm attack, was shot, had to have both his legs amputated below the knee, my baby brother. So I understand the loss of parents, and fortunately you were able to say goodbye to him and send him off, which I was not able to do. So my condolences to you. I know what a big hole in your life that loss leaves.
I'm sorry that you had to go through that, and the things that are happening to your family and to your friends and people you know. And the people are turning a blind eye to it. It's pretty scary what's happening in South Africa. Again, Karen, thank you so much. Radio Free South Africa on Facebook, ladies and gentlemen. Seek it out and get the truth. I want to say hello to all my pals there. Reb is on air. He's usually simulcasting our show. Robert Nelson Jr. Hey, we're going to be on with Robert Nelson Jr. Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, along with our good friend James Neighbors, Overpasses for America and Patriot Nation Radio 6-year anniversary shindig. We've done this every year since our group started, 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, and now we're on 6 years. It's crazy. The time flies. Overpasses and Patriot Nation celebrating 6 years together once again this Friday, 8 p.m. I'm not doing a show on 4th of July. I like to celebrate my freedom on 4th of July and not be bogged down with the stress of a radio show, because these radio shows are really stressful sometimes. You know, getting it ready, inviting the people, setting it up, programming the whole thing, getting it, you know, it's a lot of work. But that's going to be this Friday. And then next Monday, Steve Odom joins us from North Carolina. His daughter has died from a fentanyl-laced drug overdose. The town he lives in is overrun by MS-13 gang members. The police and the judges are corrupt and influenced by cartels from out of the country. And the fentanyl that killed his daughter came over the Mexican border. And he is now an angel parent because these deaths count. They are deaths that are occurring because of this border crisis. So we're going to be talking with Steve Monday. And with that, folks, I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. I don't know if this is going to work. I've been having trouble with the signal here, but let's do this. I'm going to try to get the Star Spangled Banner. Let's see what happens. Friday, 8 p.m., and then next Monday, 8 p.m., as we go live. Patriot Nation Radio Network is out. Good night. God bless you. God bless America. Thank you for tuning in once again. Glad to be back. It's been rough, but we're back. God bless. Peace.